Alrighty.
All right. Yeah.
Alrighty.
Are you on?
Yeah. Okay.
I'll start here.
Okay, there we go. All right, I gulped down a half a sandwich. You guys can keep eating. So I want to take care of two pieces of old business before we move forward. And I'm probably in better shape if you just keep chewing. So first, thank you to Brian for running data really fast for us. So here's two pieces of information that I want to give you. Is there a way, if Brian forwarded that one new slide, could we get it printed out for everybody in the room? Okay, so we'll get you a printout so you can add this to your deck. But for right now, you can just look. So one, here is the denominator. Okay, for these are now schools that have growth data. So they've got to be have grades 4 through 8 in them, whether they are PK8, K5, I don't know, but they've got those grades in them, so we could run growth data. So these are the two numbers. And then he ran the letter grades separately for the two groups. Okay, because you asked for, I had the first column, the less than 65. I did not have the second column with greater than 165 days. And then the last one is the total piece for the state as a whole. Okay, now. Just real quick, actually, I've got this. I know, I'll let you look at it again in a minute. I made a mistake on the number right here. It's now been corrected, so if you guys don't mind scratching out on your piece of paper, you should have a ridiculous number there. You guys should have yelled at me earlier.
Can you describe where you're pointing, because we can't see that.
Yep. On number of schools with a growth score over 95, under the column or the cell that says ELA 165 or more. My formula accidentally put in number of schools with a growth score over 9, so that number was really high. Once I added the 5 after the 9, I know basic math, the number dropped quite a bit. So the real number is 384 schools with 165 more days in the school year for ELA. So if you wouldn't mind crossing out 958 and replacing it with 384.
Sure.
Okay, there we go. So now you could take, in all your free time, you can take these numbers on the right-hand column, and you'll get this slide, which will have your denominator on it, and you can change it into the percentages if you want to look at it that way. Okay? Okay, what I'd like to do is turn to high school. As you remember from our earlier discussion with high school, we had a couple things that we'd thrown up on our list of the universe last time and hadn't really talked through. And since we don't have growth in high school, I wanted to come back to these two. As the gentleman from higher ed was talking, it made me think, should we be looking at ACT or SAT scores for high school? I don't know, but I threw it up there just so that I could get shot down by our row of superintendents here, because it's kind of fun. Frank is back there shaking his head at me, like, what are you doing, lady? Don't put an additional thing up there. But our initial thing was let's look at graduation rates and post-secondary opportunities, okay? And again, the idea is what do we want to hold our high schools accountable for to say the alternate schedule that you're putting forth seems to be producing something good. So first thing I just looked at was the actual indicator grade for the four-year graduation rate. We've got a four-year graduation rate, we have a five-year graduation rate, and for this year we'll also have a six-year graduation rate. We did not have that in 2018. This was one, because most indicators we end up what we call norming, so we actually created a curve so that an A was the top 5%, B the next 25%, a C the next 40%, the D the next 25%, and an F was the bottom 5%. This one we did not. This one we did more what made sense sort of thing. So an A is you have a graduation rate of 95% or higher. A B is between 90 and 94.9%. A C is 85 to 89.9%. A D is 81 to 84.9%. And an F is 80% or less. Okay? So that's what our data look like for schools that have fewer than 165 days. So we have 43 high schools that have fewer than 165 days and graduation rates at 80% or below.
Will.
Thank you.
I'm sorry to get in the weeds, but I do have a question. Is there any way to gauge graduation rate improvement? Like if you have a school that in one year goes from 50% graduation rate to 70% graduation rate?
Yep. I'll take you back so we can stare at data a little more, but that's one of the questions I was going to throw at you is that, well, just give you all the questions. First question I'm going to have for you, should we be thinking about graduation rate as an indicator? If yes, where? Next question is it just 4 year? Is it 4 year, 5 year? Is it 4 year, 5 year, 6 year? And last question is, my concern about growth is because you get weird classes. You'll get a class that you'll have 90%, 90%, 90%, 85%, 90%, 95%. Is that the one thing? So I thought the best way to get over that is to do an average of 3 years. So average of 3 years, am I seeing that improvement? Not just a single year, because I don't want to get into that weird aberrant class. So those, jumping to the end, these are the questions I have for you. What else do you want to know before we talk about that? Seems like lots of people are done chewing, so I think we can start talking. Keep chewing. It's all right. Keep chewing. How do we feel? Just maybe too early to do this, but I'm going to do it anyway. Off the top of your head, do you feel like graduation rates ought to be a requirement? Yes? No. Yes, all right, that's good. We got one question answered. Woo! Next question would be, how do you feel about these numbers? You know, what is a good graduation rate? Are we comfortable saying 80% or less is bad? Do you want to talk?
Well,
I'm happy to give you a mic. I really am happy.
I think it depends on what you're considering. You know, it's just like the cohort number that we have to use. If a kid moves in and moves out, yeah, you didn't graduate. And that's we're going to be penalized again for it. So, no, not if you're going to look at it like that.
I think there might be some in the room that need to understand how we our graduation rates are calculated at the high school with the cohort.
Can anybody who's in the room talk about this? What happened to Maria? Maria said she'd be here all day.
She's out of town. She had a conference. It's the federal calculation. He's talking about the federal cohort.
Okay. And I don't know the business rules for something about. I mean, I know it's Fay. We do look at Fay, so it's not somebody who moved in January and moved out in April. They don't count. But if they moved in August and moved out in, well, actually they wouldn't count either because you don't know if they graduated or not because they moved out too early. Yes, okay, so we'll think about the aberrant migrant student. How's that? So if we go from the assumption that these are kids that have been in your school for at least a year, they at least got there for their senior year, beginning, before school started senior year, and stayed the entire time. We do have to look at I can't remember it. So do you know it well enough to talk about it? I can't remember what the denominator is. That's what I'm struggling with. I mean, the numerator is graduates. What's the denominator?
The denominator is that freshman class.
Okay.
Yeah, so that four-year average. Yeah, it's a four-year cohort.
So if 200 kids start in the four-year cohort, and 10 leave and 5 come in, do I still have 200 as my denominator? Okay, so yes, my denominator is still 200. So yes, my denominator is still 200. Okay.
Hello. Not to bog down in details, I wanted to look it up before speaking. So the denominator is the number of kids, if we just pick a year, so if we pick 2015, that school year, it's the number of first-time freshmen in that cohort year, plus the number of kids that might transfer in any of those later years, and then it's subtracted from that any kids who transfer out to another school, who emigrate to another country, who are placed in a prison or juvenile facility, or die at any point during those 4, or in some cases 5 or 6 years from that initial cohort.
Thank you. Woo, thank you very much. I think that gets at what you were talking about. Yes, ma'am. 82? State average of graduation rate is 82.3. That's fair? Okay. Good question. So the question was, what's the state average graduation rate? And the answer is 82.3. So at the state level, we're at a D. So do you have a feeling of a minimum bar you'd want to set or how you'd want to set it? Yes, ma'am.
Would the bar graph be that different with the schools over 165 days?
Do you have the bar graph for? No. Okay. Yeah, a lot of these calculations I just did for the ones in question. I didn't do the flip side. So I don't know. If the state average is an 82.3, we've got to have more D's and F's in the other schools than we do here. Which in some ways makes sense to me because I don't think you'd survive the political pressure from the parents and the community if graduation rates are really low and you were reducing the number of instructional days.
And the shorter calendar is typically more rural than it is urban, and our urban centers have a higher concentration of kids with a whole variety of needs. So you definitely are going to see those school districts reflecting lower graduation rates. By the way, the national average, I think, is at 83%. Okay, just to give you some context there. And then that is offset by readiness as well. So, yes, we want to push kids to graduate, but we also want them ready, and we want to go after them, and that's why if they have not graduated in 4 years, we are incentivizing schools through our new school accountability system to go bring them back and graduate for the 5th year and keep them in, especially if they're a special education student who has a civil right to be there until they age out after 21, and that would be reflected in a 6-year cohort in some of our English learners as well.
So I'm hearing a couple thoughts. One is we could think about a graduation rate higher than the state average, which would be graduation rate higher than 82.3. Somebody said over here, C or higher, so 85% or higher. Let me start at the lowest common denominator and see if I can get consensus here. Would you agree that any school that is F, meaning 80% or lower graduation rate, should not get a waiver? Do you agree with that statement? Anybody disagree with that statement? Oh, God, I got 2 pieces of consensus in 15 minutes. Feed them more.
Also, I just want to mention something because I kind of saw some additional discussion after I made the comment about a 4-year, 5-year, 6-year cohort. 4-year is what is used that if you do not, I mean, this is a big part of a civil rights issue for students, and if there is a graduation rate, for those who aren't aware, below 67%, Okay. It's an automatic F. Doesn't matter what your other grades are. So that's like federal law. Okay. So like this is what we're talking about in the five-year, six-year cohort. That's new under ESSA that we're allowed to do that. Because before, what was happening is school districts across the country were going, done, not my problem after 4 years. Now you're just a unemployed adult in the workforce that doesn't have a graduation diploma. And the differences that also happened were, I believe, civil rights violations of children with disabilities who were basically just shot out. And instead of saying, hang in here, be with us, we will continue to work on life skills or safety and various things that are part of taking care of children and those steps for after they graduate.
So those are good points. And just to point out a couple of things, this is just 4 years. Just to be clear, what you said is you get an automatic F on the overall grade. Obviously, you get an F on this indicator, but the overall grade, you're forced to an F and you're forced into the CSI designation. You have to be comprehensive support and interventions if you have a graduation rate below 67% or below. 67% or below, you're automatically in a CSI group. Okay. So what we'd be talking about here is the 68 to 80% mark. Should they be excluded from being allowed to go less? Now, 5 or 6 year graduation rates for our indicators, what we do is we actually calculate the three rates separately. What we will do, we don't have 6 years, as I said, but we will for the 2019 report card that'll come out this late fall, early winter. It'll include the 6 year. So they calculate each separately. So it's not like you've got one overall rate, but then you get a fewer number of points, but you still get points added into your score for a 5 year graduation rate and a 6 year graduation rate. And that was, as the superintendent pointed out, a huge point for our task force that said we need to be, I'm going to use a double negative on purpose, but not disincentivized to work with our kids who did not graduate but could. There needs to be some accountability incentive to keep working with those kids and get them to graduate in 5 years or 6 years if they didn't make 4 years, because right now the incentive is to ignore them and focus on the next four-year cohort. So for this purpose, accountability aside, for this purpose, do we want to include 5 year and 6 year graduation rates? Or do we want to focus on the 4 year? And if you say yes to this one, the next question I didn't put up there will be how? How should we include it? Any thoughts on 4 year versus 5 year versus 6 year? 4 year sounds, 4 year sounds the simplest. Yes. And quite honestly, if we add in 5 and 6 years, we will probably also end up raising a cut a little bit too. So it may not gain us anything. 4 years is easy. How do you feel about the next one? Let's put these two together. What if we did 4 years, but we did the 4 year average over 3 years to avoid any aberrant bumps in any one cohort of student? Okay, so put those two together. Did we really just come up with a recommendation for this indicator?
I think we did.
Oh my God, okay. Anybody want to argue with us?
I don't know anything about this stuff.
I'm elementary. Wow. I thought this side of the room was quiet. Okay. Anything?
Well, devil's always ready to hire me as his advocate. So let's throw out a wrinkle here. We have a number of, in certain areas, we have a lot of charter schools, and we have an online charter school that's under investigation right now. And there have been studies that show that some of these programs have a habit of exiting kids that they think aren't going to perform well and dumping them back into the public schools. So how concerned are we about the impact, the potential impact of public schools absorbing these kids that are going to tend to drag their scores down because they're exiting from these systems? Not so much a problem in the rural areas as in urban areas where we have a lot of charter schools, but are we concerned about this? Is this a potential problem? What does the data show?
So I don't have a ready answer to that question, but I do know that there are three Oklahoma City charters who have fewer than 165 days. So I could certainly look within Oklahoma City at the charter schools and look at their graduation rates, assuming that they do go to grade 12 and have graduation rates. And I can pull that data in for the next meeting.
But in particular,
I didn't expect to have a follow-up, but what information do we have? To what extent are students leaving the charter schools because they're failing, they're not succeeding, and their scores are then being accounted against the public schools that receive them?
They're not being counted.
So, Brian, you think you have an answer? You've got like six steps to figure it out.
Are those students even being factored into that, I guess, is my point.
Yeah, it depends on when they come in, right? Yeah, so it kind of depends on when they come in. If they moved in 10th grade,
We've already worked through that in our graduation, indicator. And that's heavily regulated under federal law, so for those reasons that you described.
So I'm not a statistician, but I do worry about if this figured on a percentage. And I'm just sensitive to the fact that a lot of the schools that are less than 165 days are smaller schools. So could there be a rate or some other calculation that might be able to be used?
Yeah, and that's honestly why we do the three-year. Because, yes, an 84 to an 86 to an 82 is a weird bump, but you put it together, your denominator is then increased by three. And that's what really helps us get to something more stable. And so what we're doing then is comparing the four-year graduation rate of 2014, 15, 16 to the four-year graduation rate of 15, 16, 17 to the four-year graduation rate of 16, 17, 18. So you're just dropping one year and adding another so you can see the overall trend. And it is just a way to bump up that denominator to smooth that out. And that's exactly why we do that, is because of that problem. But I hear you say there is a little bit of a concern about just putting a number on, like 83% is our number, that if somebody's 82.9, do we round up? If they go from 83.2 to 82.8, they're in, they're out, they're in, they're out. How do we handle something like that? Let's see. I want to go this way. A question is, there's a couple things. What we haven't resolved, we know that's bad. I'm assuming we're saying that's good. We don't know if the cut, or we haven't agreed if the cut is a letter, a percentage, which is a letter's interpretation of the percentage, or the average. I'm trying to think. I don't know if there's a way to get around the concern of if somebody is right at the cut, they could bounce up and down a little bit each year and be eligible and eligible, eligible and eligible every year.
That's just one factor in all the other criteria that we've had consensus in. So that.
True, but I think the factors, I think all the criteria are conjunctive. So it's not you can have growth. That's not a good example. It's not that you can have, we haven't gotten here yet, but post-secondary opportunities or growth. What we've talked about so far is conjunctive. I mean, let's put it with the one we've agreed on. It's not that either you're not a CSI school or you meet a graduation rate. It's you're not a CSI school and you meet a graduation rate. So unless we change it to an or. But right now, minimum criteria would be minimum criteria. And I've heard, or I guess where we are is, it could be 85, it could be 82.3, or it could be 81. Now, the way the grades are set up is that I shortened this, but this is really 89.99999 as far as it goes. It does not round up. That whatever your graduation rate, if it's below 81.0, that's what's wrong. This is supposed to say 80%. No, that's wrong. Okay, I'm going the wrong direction. I'm sorry. This is, if you're below 90%, no matter how many nines are after your 89%, you're still a C. Do that over here. I messed it up over here. I'll do it right over here. So this number here is really 89.9999999. So it does not round up to a 90. So if your graduation rate is truly 89.9999999, you're a C school, or C for that indicator, not for the school, but for the indicator. Boom, 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 boom.
Any other thoughts? So we have not quite come up with a cut score, but we did come up with some rules about how to calculate it, and some definite yeses and some definite nos. It's just we're in a maybe zone between 81 and 89.9%. Actually, I think it's between 81 and 85%. Do we agree? Let me ask that first. Let's start easy. If you're 90 or above, you're okay, right? 85, okay. So it really is, are we going with 81 or 82.3? I think we need, minimum guidelines. Yeah, minimum guidelines to me.
I just don't understand, once again, the use of another letter grade when we just saying the state average is 82.
Okay, so you want to
stick. So if you're just going to say you have to be above the state average.
All right, thank you for pushing me off one direction. So now the proposal is, again, ignore the letter grades, but the graduation rate has to be higher than the state average. So right now, as of today, that would be higher than an 82.3. That may be different in 2021, but right now it's 82.3. Like it. What if the state average drops below 80%? Do we put any threshold in there? Okay, so all of the mumbling I just heard, and correct me if I didn't translate this correctly, I asked, what if the state average dropped below 80? Would you change your rule? And the immediate response was no, that the federal requirement of 67 is that only threshold we should put in there.
Wow. Okay, so we just shifted from talking about what's fair for kids to what's fair for schools. And I know that's not what you meant, but think about how that plays. I think that when we're looking at the at least average for our state, that's something that seems reasonable. But when we start dropping below and we accept that, that makes me really uncomfortable. How do you defend that?
I would also keep in mind that right now it is our schools with fewer days that are doing better than the state average. So if we start dropping below the state average, if the average drops and we are dropping with it, is that a problem? Yeah, we would adjust up. So, that is a rule we could put in. But that is a rule you could put in, is today's average is 82.3. So every year's cut is either the state average or 82.3, whichever is higher. Is that fair?
Yeah, and our state goal in ESSA is to be in the top 10 states. All right, so there is one that's at 91 and another that is at 90. It's New Jersey and Iowa. And so if we're going to hit our goal, we can't just be talking about the minimum here, in my opinion. But I think if we talk about average, then it is more of here's where Oklahoma is and the way we're delivering things a little differently, and at least it's a waterline that kind of equalizes the way you're setting a bar. But you're not putting that so low as to just accept the federal floor. No.
I may be getting in the weeds on this average thing, but you could, as a school, improve in your graduation rate. The state passes you, and you could be not eligible with a higher graduation rate the following year. My high school, my high school improved from an 82 to an 83. The state average went from an 82 to an 84. I improved, but now I'm not eligible because the state average grew higher than I did. And that would be a very, very small percentage chance of that happening, but, that may be too much in the weeds right now.
Yeah, it doesn't seem likely, but I do say, yes, obviously statistically it's possible. And one thing I don't think this is necessarily the appropriate forum for, but we are taking notes on some of these
I don't know what to call them, but like outlier cases, because I think there is going to be, there's guidelines, and then there's going to be, I would assume, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but a little bit of discretion. So if there's a weird aberrant data point for some bizarre reason that year, you know, just to be real specific for a second, you are in a four-day school week building with 149 school days. And in February, your building is hit by a tornado. And so in March, April, your test scores drop. Is that worthy of separate consideration besides just meeting the guidelines as you're rebuilding a school and rebuilding and wanting to stay with a four-day school week? I could see the department saying, this is a separate piece that we need to work with the district to decide which way they go. She's not listening to me, so I'm going to say that's a safe thing to say. I know, there's so many world problems. But I just said, I think I would be surprised if you guys didn't have a way to deal with some kind of just bizarre cases that happen from year to year. Like a school got hit by a tornado just before they took the test. And so they've been doing really well as a 159 school day school system, but that threw them off. That may not be, you have to meet the guidelines or else and you're done, and I don't care that you got hit by a tornado, but there will be a process for an appeal of even the waiver. We just don't know what it is yet. I mean, assuming we're going to figure that out.
That's why the narrative on the plan is important.
Yep. So I think in a case like that, part of what you would do in your plan is show, here's how much I grew, here's where we're going, this is how this helped, this is what the kids got to do. Because you could also, we haven't gotten to this yet, but the next piece is, let me go back there, post-secondary. And I could also see a case, and particularly for schools that have fewer instructional days, that they'd be making more progress on the post-secondary indicator. And here was the example, the answer to the question. These are the list of four things: advanced coursework, which is AP or IB courses, concurrent or dual enrollment, internships or career tech, coursework leading to an industry certification, and there's a whole list of what that is that I did not feel like copying. So there is a link that you can go to get all of the details about what counts as a post-secondary indicator, towards your post-secondary indicator. So it may be in your district that's the only thing that rose but didn't raise as much as the state average that you could make an argument with all the other data. So our post-secondary, again, I just did less than 165 days. But this, again, was looking at the percentage of kids who are engaging in post-secondary opportunities is what they called them. In the task force, we had a huge discussion about opportunity versus success. And we decided to keep the focus on the opportunity. Do the kids have the opportunity to participate in? So we're not saying at this point that a student participated in an AP course and got a D in the course and scored a 2 on the AP test, that counts against the school. Right now, that counts for the school because the kid was enrolled in the AP class. We may at some point look into putting in a performance indicator, but right now the most important thing was getting the opportunity to these kids. Because again, a lot of the rural areas we kept hearing, they don't even have access to this. We've got to rely on the technology to give them access. But these are all the things we have.
Just real,
thank
real
you.
Quick,
I'm
sorry. just a point of clarification. Are we talking about, because like, because a lot of schools are online now and a lot of these things are offered, everybody has equal access and or not necessarily in that situation.
Yeah.
But so are we talking about more physical locations here compared to online locations or
yeah.
What are we?
It could be. However, you should know we have a very great statistic. Oklahoma is ranked number one in the country in the most school percentage of school districts that are offering concurrent enrollment, for example.
This is a big one.
And so the opportunity is there. We're at 98%. The national average is 75. So this is tremendous. Now, what we're trying to do is drive not just some kids to take advantage of that opportunity, but all kids to have an advantage, take advantage of that in schools, not just some. And then the way down the road piece is then as you're lifting quality, you know, then you could perhaps factor in a score that's being received. But that is not something that we wanted to entertain at all until we see access actually occurring and kids taking that and participating and for a whole host of reasons. But great question. But I think it's worth pointing out Oklahoma is a leader in the country in that. Think about the fact that a career tech center is a hub with all these sending schools, and all schools have the opportunity, really, to be in a career tech system and earn that high skill, high industry certification, or enrolled in one of our regional universities or research universities that are scattered throughout the state, but purposefully they are located geographically in different regions. So that's why Oklahoma is able to claim that distinction. And then with online and virtual, certainly that opportunity exists for all of them, regardless where they're located.
Okay, thank you.
So, and I think you have to look at it separately by type as well, because I think what the superintendent was talking about, specifically the concurrent dual enrollment, and a lot of the big universities across the country are moving to offering classes online so that kids can log on and take the class. APIB is also doing that. So, because one of the concerns we heard is we don't have teachers qualified to teach an AP course, so why are we penalizing the kids? And are we? And this goes back to the point the superintendent made earlier, are we penalizing the kids or the school by saying you don't have AP classes? And the idea is to look for some of these other ways of administering an AP course, like online. What I don't know is whether or not College Board is moving towards a system that would allow 4-day school week folks to take advantage of that by saying the kids are going to be online who want AP calculus are going to be online for 4 hours a day every Friday. And that's how they're teaching it versus an hour a day throughout the school year. Internships tend to be more in person. I don't know if there's an internship about done remotely. Those tend to be more in-person internships. Career tech ed coursework leading to industry certification, again, tends to be in person. Yes, sir.
Just curious on how you were thinking about calculating this. That's my bigger concern with this component, because every kid who has the minimum ACT score has the opportunity to take concurrent. That doesn't mean they do. Same way with career tech, but we're also limited on space. There's 19 schools that go to career tech. I only get so many slots, yep. So I'm limited there once again. I have zero industry in my town. Internships are difficult there.
Yeah, so that actually is a great point, but it is something that is already built into school accountability. So we already have a metric for how all of that is qualifying and accounted for in there. I don't know why we would want to redo that and create something else. Online does make for an opportunity, but we're talking about one child counting one time. So one kid that takes 14 AP classes does not count 14 times. One time. And so if you have an internship, talk to Hilldale. You know, Dr. Cootie said, gosh, we don't have industry, but here's what we did. And they actually built in internships. She had 50 in the first year that she tried it. So there are ways to build in those internships. We've changed our coding, so you now have a code, so we can capture that information as well. So I feel like we're in a better place at this point. It will take, in my mind, this is the easy softball opportunity for those who have a 4-day week, actually, because you have a fifth day that could be still school, but it's all internship, or it's all some other creative way of doing things. And at least that was just a thought I had. I thought that's probably an easier thing.
So you can go online and get the answers, just a quick look. I apologize, I don't think I know how to share just a screen, just PowerPoint. But the idea is, screw everything up, or I may fix it. I don't know. Nope, it's not doing anything. Doesn't like that. Oh, I know. It's enable. Where I'm trying to go to is the sheet. Oh, hey, can I show an Excel workbook on the screen?
Oh, per screen. Is there a way to do that?
Sorry, I did not hear the question.
Can I show my Excel sheet on the screen? Right now it's only showing PowerPoint. Okay. Hey, let me close out my email real quick. Okay. So here, can you guys see that? Is that at all visible? I'll read some of the smaller print to you. But what I want you to look at is peach and gray. So show up as peach and gray on your screen. What you're doing is you're saying how many students enrolled in your school for a full academic year completed at least one qualifying course. And again, that's an internship. It's a career tech ed. It's an AP, IB, dual concurrent enrollment. Any of those, you get how many kids did at least one of those. So you don't get multiple credit for a student who does dual enrollment and AP. They still only get counted as one student. But it does raise the issue that Frank made and left on.
He's getting tea.
Okay, good. That if you're limited by community factors, number of slots available, this number is going to have a hard time growing. So this is one we probably do want to look at a flat number, not a growth on. But basically, all you're doing is entering the number for each grade level. Actually, no, I'm sorry. It's grayed out for K-10 because it doesn't count. But for grades 11 and 12, you enter the number. And this is just norming it. Yeah, I hate that. Okay. So this indicator is worth 10 points. So what this tells me is that to get 10 points, 76% of your kids need to be enrolled. If you get 0 points, you've got 6% or fewer of your kids enrolled in some post-secondary opportunity. And then there's a... algorithm in between all those to get all the other grades. Okay, so it maxes out at 76%, that's a 10. And anything at 6.3% or below is a 0. Is that? Let's see if I can help with the squinting. Does that help with the squinting?
Is it going to be measured on availability or enrollment?
Enrollment. So the idea, and again, we went round and round on the task force on this, but the idea was to put pressure on schools and communities to find a way to get more kids enrolled in these kinds of post-secondary opportunities. And again, it's just for 11th and 12th graders. So it is for the kids getting close to exiting.
I know that in our area, like he was saying, we use every year every slot that they give us for the career tech. So there's not going to be an increase. We actually have a wait list.
That's just one way.
Okay, and then we also don't have any AP classes because we don't have any extra teachers.
AP online.
So that was the idea of being able to move towards some of these things that are available through technology.
Who monitors and does the AP online?
College Board, the people who run the AP.
Okay.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yep. And everyone using that then has the certified teacher in that field.
Yep. Then that's why we're not going to look at growth. We're going to look at the absolute.
Great.
So you'll check that guideline off every year.
I'm, so
it's not improvement.
I didn't communicate my question well enough. I thought it meant growth.
No, we're not. We're just saying. I was saying that I think theoretically the schools that have the fewer number of days in a school year have more opportunities to find a way throughout the year to get kids to engage in one of these activities. So it should be something that you guys are higher on than schools that have 180 days. But I'm not looking at growth. I'm saying there's a flat cut. Let's see. Now I have to go back to here and here. Okay. And this is where we are right now. So 9 out of the, can I look at the piece of paper that was just handed out, the supplement? Here we go.
541 minus 310 is 231. So out of the 231 high schools, nine of them right now are getting an A, which is above that 70-something percent. And only six are getting an F. This really is truly a bell curve. Brian, do we have a way to pull out percentages? Like right now that spreadsheet tells me what the norm grades are that lead to a, the norm scores are that lead to a letter grade. Can I get from the actual percentages to a letter grade? Okay, we may have to calculate that and bring it back next time, but we can think about it as a A to F grade, we can think about it as a flat percentage, or we can think about it again as greater than the average of the state, whatever that is. Or we can say, Marianne, I hate this indicator and I don't want to include it at all. Right? There you go. Should it be included? Is there a minimum grade? Or go back to the average? Anybody want to address any of those questions?
So can we just start with, should it be included?
Yes, it should be included as a guideline.
I would say yes. Others? Okay, it looks like that's...
It's not
okay,
consensus.
Let's do this. Let's
no.
Do.
Let me just do a no real quick. I want to get just quick eyeball. No. So the rest of you are I don't cares? Not enough information to make a decision yet. Okay.
Okay, well, we're going to have to make a decision. So it is actually already a component of school report cards. So that means there's already a way to calculate it. So it was determined that this would be an important factor to consider when we think about our students being successful in school or not. So it just means, to me, it makes sense to include it. It's participation.
And it's just, okay.
So, yeah, I can go back to that spreadsheet, but you start, as a school, you just enter the number of kids, and the calculations are done to turn it into a number that's from 0 to 10, and then the 0 to 10 is divided into the grade. So what I was just asking Brian is, because the report card puts in shortcuts for us, which is nice, but not so nice when I'm trying to go back and unpack it, can I get the calculation of what is the breakdown of percentages that led to A to F before it was normed? Yes, that is the only two percentages I know, is that 6% is 0. If you get 6.3% or below, it's 0. And if you got, 76% or above, you're a 10. But I don't know how 2 through 9 was calculated. Yes, sir.
I think one thing that might help the group is, because I know the first thing the legislature is going to ask for is, who qualifies or what are the numbers that qualify currently under this? I think the idea is people like post-secondary indicator, but what does that mean to the schools that are currently in position? Is it 20% of them, 50% of them? What's going to really fall out when you run the numbers?
I wanted to go here. Yeah, so as I said, all I know right now are grades. We can calculate some of those in terms of percentages left. And my goal for next meeting is to take all of our early initial draft recommendations, consensus building, and actually then go through all of our 541 schools that currently are at the less than 165 days and see who's where. How many schools would make it? How many would miss it? Is there one indicator that's throwing out a majority of schools? So to do that, I need a cut for everything in order before I can start giving data back to you about here's where we look right now. So that's why I'm pushing a little bit for a cut. So you said you didn't have enough information to make a decision. What other information could I get for you that would help? And I don't mean to put that on you. Anybody can answer that because I think a lot of us are in that same place.
Just me personally, I just felt like the superintendents who have to deal with the availability and what's there and all that have a kind of a better right to speak than I do. That's all I was saying.
Okay.
I just kept my hand down, not because of either one, but I just think those guys are the ones that deal with it more than I do.
And
And I agree with that. I think that's true. But I think Dr. Cootie gave a good example. This goes along with the ICAP process that is beginning. And if we're having to move toward post-secondary, it doesn't mean college. It means career ready. So it could also be kids that are having internship positions. So any kind of community positions, I don't think you're limited to that. I think you could be working on a farm if you need to.
Do you know, Frank, just to put you on the spot, have you looked up your indicator for this grade for any of your school or your high school? Okay. Because that's one thing I'll do on my spare time between the two meetings is look at the actual schools. Because it may be if we set it at the school or state average, excuse me, you may already be there even with your limited slots. And again, it's not that we want you, well, obviously we want you to grow the slots, but it's not that you're being held to growing the slots. It's the held to the minimum. And trying to make sure, and we may need to do some work to get information out there about how to access things like IP and AB, other way, AP, IB, over the internet, and ways to get at some of this stuff that it isn't just physically right there in your town. Yes, ma'am.
Hello. I think maybe one of the data points that would be helpful for the high schools that are currently less than 165, if we knew, it helps me to know the post-secondary grades or the spread, but are those because of internships? Are they because of concurrent? Are they, because in my mind, it's hard for me to fathom that a high school student taking concurrent is off one day a week. Because if your concurrent class meets, you meet. Like for my, you know what I'm saying? So they're still in school. Yep. For an AP class, especially if they're online, they're not going to modify because you're in a four-day week. If they log on and everybody in the nation logs on, you're logging on that day. And so if these are coming from career tech primarily, then I think that mm-hmm. adds to the conversation. And it's that might be the data piece we're missing.
And we also know that career tech does not modify what they're doing. You know, the students who are going to a school district that is only offering courses during 4 days a week, they actually are just, that student shows up regardless of what their school calendar is.
Just real quick, how many district soups do I have in the room? Okay, so I'm going to put you on the spot, but you should feel free to say no. Would it be possible, but never mind. Would it be possible between now and the next meeting to look at, because all we have on our indicator is just what percentage of your students or what number of your students did one of these things. So our numbers don't break out your question. Would it be possible to find out how many of those kids are career tech ed, how many are internships, how many are AP, and just bring that number back to the next meeting, just for your districts that are here in the room, just as sort of an FYI?
Does the data that we put in not indicate that?
Right. We just put in the number that does one of the four things.
State average is 43, and I was at 40.
Okay.
I was at 44.
So,
I'm sorry, what did you say?
43%.
State average, 43%.
So let me propose that when we run, do we?
Okay, let's use a mic so that we get that recorded.
Okay. So Carolyn, tell me we do have it. So you guys, giving you with homework assignment, you're off the hook now. We can pull some of that. So my proposal, unless you guys shout me down, is that for next month, I want to calculate this indicator two ways. One is state average, and two is not an F. Are you comfortable with that? So, is one way. So that's one way, and then the other way is not an F. Yep.
So state average is the question you're asking.
So,
got it.
So what?
Are
what
you cool with that?
Well, no, where I'm headed, he doesn't have
but
to be okay
get,
with that.
You can get above it. Yeah. You better believe it.
What I want to do, again, for our third one, is to say, given the most strict criteria we proposed, here's the number of our current 541 schools that would make reach the minimum guideline, and here's the one that wouldn't, and look at to see which of the indicators that are the hardest hurdle to get over, and do another calculation with our least restrictive. So again, not an F. So in that situation, there would be six high schools that would be eliminated from consideration. So that's our least restrictive. And bringing those back as specific examples and then see where we are with those data. Does that sound reasonable? Does anybody want to say I have another idea of ways you could cut it?
I do have a question on this high school issue. Are you looking at it as graduation rates and post-secondary?
Right now these are conjunctive criteria.
So what you're saying, though, is there would be no academic achievement?
Well, that was what I got shouted down. Not even shouted. I just got looks. I got some evil, evil looks.
So is everybody okay with that? I don't know that I'm okay with that. So that would mean that high school would only be graduation rate and if you're involved in a post-secondary course. That's how we say success for kids. Does that feel... Are you comfortable with that? There is no growth.
Because we have an 8th grade test and an 11th grade test. I mean, we can do some funny statistics, but that's going to be a tough one for schools to figure out how to try and achieve.
So is there something else like state average or even the letter grade C, which is a broader range for achievement? ACT and SAT are how those are built. But it is the state, if you were to look at the report card, which is funneling in all of those in multiple subjects, and look at either the state average, or you could even lower that to C. Because remember, the state average is halfway through C. So if it's the letter grade C and above, you've kind of even dropped that a little lower. I just have a hard time measuring success based on you were in class enough to graduate and you participated in something else. That doesn't seem like it meets the bar for success.
It feels like we're measuring and focusing on inputs rather than effectiveness. I think we all know students can participate in AP and pick up something, hopefully, but probably some of them don't get a passing grade on the test, the AP exam, which are quite rigorous. But anyway, also with internships, and this is going to really date me, but going way back to when the earth was still cooling off in something called vocational education, which was my field, we used to have something called Cooperative Occupational Experiences, COE. It became known as Cut Out Early. And there's not an opportunity in every single community for high-quality internships. And if you are providing internships, they need to be carefully structured so there is learning occurring and they're not just getting out of school early and getting... When they get paid, that's a nice benefit, too, but they still need to be learning something. So I guess I take it to the next level and hope that we have some kind of evidence that these things are contributing to success in the education of the students, not just busy work.
Go ahead, Steve.
So my point on achievement is even if you lower it to a C, which is a little bit below the state average, what we're talking about are potentially schools who, you know, once a high school, the junior level SAT or ACT is a lot harder to move over time, right? Because you've got kids who've had 10 years of schooling in front of them. So you're not changing it year after year. And so if you would automatically cut out a ton of people if you say we're going to start right at a C, then you're talking about the difference potentially in intern opportunities or other things because you're saying, well, we're gonna alter your calendar or you change the school district where the elementary or the middle school will qualify, but the high school won't because of that score. And so it's not that I don't believe in the academic achievement, it's just if the overall outcome is to get kids work ready, work or college ready, and you can demonstrate that, even though it's an input, I feel like that in and of itself, once you get to high school, is our bigger goal than that achievement.
Just one point of clarification, too. With the no CSI and no ATSI, we do have some achievement in there already.
Right.
So you can't be in the bottom 5% on the SAT or ACT in the state, and you can't have any of your student groups be in the bottom 5%.
Correct.
So there's a little bit already, not nearly, I think, what the superintendent's thinking.
Which
there's a little
I believe
bit.
Is sufficient. That's just me.
Do we have another comment here?
I'm debating.
You're debating. Uh-oh.
And just while he's debating, just a quick point of clarification, because I thought this was a little confusing. This state, SAT is our state assessment, ACT is our alternate. What that means is we set the cut scores for basic, proficient, and advanced on the SAT, again, with educators from around the state, as well as higher ed and workforce people, since this was high school. The ACT and the College Board did a study themselves nationally, not just Oklahoma, but nationally, to say this score on the SAT is the equivalent of this score on the ACT. So we use their study to say, so therefore the cut scores on the ACT are this, 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 and this. But we report the scores for accountability on the OPI, which is our, what is it, 200 to 500? 200 to 400? 200 to 400, so that it doesn't matter if you're on the, it took the ACT or SAT, your score is reported the same and the cut scores are the same. But that's how we got there, just an FYI. Did I stall enough to help you decide if you want to comment? They're still arguing or debating. This doesn't look like a bad argument. I'm sorry? You're not in on this. That's cool. Okay. So we've already got not an F. With the CSI, ATSI, we've already got a not an F as a achievement requirement, I guess, is where I'm headed with that. Do you want me to look at anything else? Because I can certainly pull pretty easily data of A to F on achievement for schools with fewer than 165 days, if you are interested. There is just brimming with interest in that, I can tell. Are you sure? We can pull that pretty quickly, right?
No, just on the achievement indicator, what is the distribution of A to F for the less than 165?
That's all. Okay. What I'm going to do right now to keep us moving forward. Give me a second to type and tell me where I get it wrong. I did this during lunch. So the Reedover Elementary School, the reason together are separate is question mark, is because I'm going to run it both ways so that we can come to a decision next time. Compensatory or conjunctive is the other way to say that. Tops. Okay, so this is what I think are where we are. Is that, do we think I captured? And I'm going to go, because we've already had a conversation I thought we would have after this. So I'm going to flip through the next piece of this before the superintendent tells me I'm missing something, because I don't have ATSI, TSI up here, because I thought that would be a separate conversation. Is there anything that I wrote here you think I got wrong? Let me start there. Yes, sir. Can I give him a mic, please?
I can get shot down that, but on your achievement, is there a problem with just setting a minimum ACT average for your school?
For your school? You mean to
for your high school.
So for all high schools to meet the waiver?
Well, I mean, you asked about, Joy, you asked about achievement.
Yep.
An achievement component, is there a problem with just...
Yeah, I mean, you can't do ACT just because the state is using both SAT and ACT. The idea, yes. The actual, no. It would have to be a... Okay. OPI indicator.
So I would be
I would be against a particular score because for the reason that we would then be, the whole thing is we don't want to codify a certain score. ACT can do some changes. It can change their scores. They can add subjects. They can do different things. When we look at all of that washing through a process like our school indicator on achievement, that's different because that has to go through peer review. It has to have equating tables that blend the two, and I feel more comfortable with that. I feel really uncomfortable saying you have to get this score as an average. That's my only. Does anyone have different thoughts? I'm afraid of what that score would be.
Oh, that's okay. I just, like I said, you're looking for achievement, and we all take one or the other. Or both.
We already have all this factored in to our school accountability indicator that has gone through unbelievable vetting that is required in federal law and has gone through peer review and started out here in the task force, then to the state board, then already approved in the legislature. And it's hard for me to want to have a second way of measuring that. I don't know. I think that's a lot to keep up with.
So if we put achievement on hold for a second, put it in the parking lot for a minute, and then say this is where I think we have consensus. Again, we've got a couple of questions, so I'm going to run it both ways and give you data back both ways. Should we look at a minimum score for ELA and a different minimum score for math based on the state averages for the two for growth, or should it be the overall state average on the indicator when you combine them the two together? So we're going to look at that. For high schools, we talked about for the minimum post-secondary opportunities, we'll run it both ways. Is your percentage of kids involved in any post-secondary opportunity at or above the mean, or is it at least not an F? I'm run it both ways. Okay, so this is where I think we've got consensus. That's what's next. So I think this is where we've got consensus so far. Now, what I'd planned to talk about next was student groups, but we hit this earlier. So
I just have a question. Are we not talking anymore about outcomes on a high school besides participation and graduation rate?
No, I'm not. I want to go back to that, okay. But I want to get through this real quick first to make sure I think we have consensus on several things. Okay. So I want to get that articulated and then go back to that achievement question. Okay. So, you know, we talked about we could go through by student group and we could say you must have a minimum growth score of whatever for every single student group. Now, we kind of touched on this, and then we talked a lot about TSI and ATSI. So what I heard that I want to push back and make sure I heard correctly is you all are comfortable with saying you can't be an ATSI or a TSI school. None of your student groups that you have 10 or more students on can be in the bottom 5%. That you're very comfortable with. Is that a fair statement? Okay. Did you want to ratchet that up anymore by making separate bars for kids in certain student groups like economically disadvantaged students with disabilities? Or do you want to keep it at the ATSI, ASI? Yes, I just want to clarify. You guys want to keep it at ATSI and TSI, right? Okay, so that slide is done. Okay, so these are new data for you. So of the schools that are identified needing comprehensive support and improvement. There are 99 schools overall in the state. There are 28 schools that are currently have fewer than 165 days. Okay, so that would eliminate 28 schools out of the 541 from meeting that waiver. Okay. Now I look at ATSI. So again, that is the lowest 5% of achievement for any student group you have that are 10 or more of those students. There were 352 schools, and that is in addition to the 99 schools. So all the F schools have already been taken out, so the 352 schools had a range of B through D. 352 schools are in ATSI. 81 of those have 165 instructional days. So these two criteria eliminate 109 out of our 541 schools. Okay? And just FYI, the other analysis I want to do before next meeting is also look at schools within districts, because I heard the very first meeting that's a huge issue if two of my five schools qualify. What am I going to do? So I want to not just look at percentage of schools, but also give you information about percentages of schools within districts as well. That makes sense. So this district 100% qualified or 100% did not qualify, that's easy. The harder thing to wrestle with as a superintendent is going to be 40% of my schools qualified.
I'll just tell you, I don't care.
I don't think it matters for guidelines. I think it's important.
I feel like that is something that is a district decision. If you are, like, I think it has to be looked at mm-hmm. one school at a time, mm-hmm. and if districts want to do something, they can. But if you're just talking about how difficult will this be for some districts who want to do this, but are going to run into political problems because some teachers are going to go only 4 days and some would go five, or some would go shorter or longer. Is that what you're...
I just wanted to give the information. I don't think it actually informs whether the guidelines are there or not. I just wanted to let them know what percentage of schools are 100% out, 100% in. I mean, what percent of schools within... What percent of the districts have schools okay. that are 100% out or 100% in
okay.
versus
okay.
there's going to be impetus on the superintendent to have meetings and figure out, do I just apply for these two schools? So it's just FYI. You're right. I don't see how it would change the guidelines. It's just.
Yeah.
I think
there's going to be hard and difficult conversations that districts have to decide. But I don't think that we are in a place that we should lower things to make that easier.
Yep. So here's where we are overall to get to your question before.
Just something I wanted to add to that. We will have, like for us, we have a lower elementary, so pre-K through 2, yep. which none of these things we've even talked about factor in there as well. So thinking about that, if it's going to be by site instead of by district.
Yep. I actually, because of that comment earlier, it is on my, I think, very last slide now. So, of course, it's not on the one that's printed out in front of you. But I added that as something we do need to think about. So yes, right now, if it is a PK2 or even PK3 would have the CSI, but it won't have growth. So it'll only have one. That's another question, is if the school only has one possible criteria, a PK3 school. So they can't possibly show growth, but they could show CSI and TSI. What do you do? But this is the final thing where I think we are adding in the question from earlier, where's TSI and ATSI? This is our list now. Yes, sir.
I just don't know if you need to do that kind of work. I speak only for myself, but as school superintendent, I can't have one school on one and one on the other. You're either all in or you're all out on your calendar.
So you wouldn't even have room for your high school?
I can't do it. But you have a negotiated agreement with your teachers, with your support staff. It's not doable. It's a in or out. We're going to have one calendar, and that's what we're – and I'm just speaking for me.
Yeah, it was just analysis I was offering, so I won't do it if it's going to agree. Yeah, no, I don't need to. I was just trying to be responsive to what you guys raised last time.
Okay, we have a couple people that never have spoken that want to speak. Okay, wait. Well, let's get the mic for you. Let's get the mic for you.
Who's got a mic?
We're trying to get there.
I'm just wondering, just to kind of analyze, to know of your schools in your district, would you even want to know? Because if you have one school that's a low performer, would that be, let's get this school up so that we can move all of our schools to a lower, or would it, I don't know, I'm just wondering if it would be good to know. I mean, because I'm interested in how many schools, as a taxpayer, how many schools in my district would fall in that category.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Others? Was there another comment back there?
I just wanted to go back a little bit to what we were talking about at the first meeting. And I know we sort of put juvenile crime and things like that in sort of, mm-hmm. okay, let's put that into the plan mm-hmm. that's going to be developed. And not, but are the CSI and ATSI, do they account for socioeconomic factors as in so much as... I think that was one of the larger concerns at the previous meeting, was that those be sort of addressed a little bit here. And a lot of these factors that I'm seeing are general factors, but they're not necessarily specific to some of the students that might be the greatest impacted here. And so that's my concern, is that I just want to make sure those students aren't being left out of this conversation.
Right. So we won't know by not looking at gaps or not looking at targets by student group, we won't know if overall in a particular school, students with disabilities are not growing at the same rate that students without disabilities are, until those students fall into the bottom 5% of the state, and then that school will get targeted. So that's where we are right now. Okay. Yep.
John? Question, just I missed the first meeting, and maybe this was addressed then. I apologize. Do we have a plan for those schools? What if a school is above 165 but they want to go below 165? They wouldn't have any of this data as far as what they were doing below 165. Would that be part of the plan that the state board would then look at their proposal?
Yeah, the idea behind this is that the criteria are the criteria. Regardless of your history for having fewer than 165 days, you would show that you met the criteria and you would produce a plan. The schools that have been less than 165 days would talk about what they've been doing and how they believe that has improved, I'm guessing, more than just performance, but performance, quality of life, engagement. You talked about last time one of the things that improved that is less data-driven, it's less tangible, but the kids that leave in the middle of the school day for athletics on Fridays, that now you don't have teachers having to wrestle with, well, do I teach my half the class that's here, my 20% of the class that's here, or do I just let them read books while I wait for everybody else to come back to school? That those kinds of things are taken care of now. So that all goes into the plan, is that sort of qualitative. If you have not been a school or a district with fewer than 165 days, it would be forward-looking rather than back-looking, but you would still say, I think I can solve these problems by moving to block scheduling 4 days a week and allowing Fridays to be used for X, Y, and Z. So this is why I'm proposing it, and my data show I'm eligible, so I would like to do this. So it's just basically the tense you'd be using and how much site-specific data you'd have available. Because we're hoping that districts like the ones here that talked about their personal experiences last time would bring forth their own local data and their local experience about what they found that we don't have to make comparisons with at the state level. So we're trying to make the guidelines very state level. We have these data. We can make it very fair, very comparable. But locally, your plan can do a lot more. Others?
I just want to go back to the point of by site rather than district. I mean, that's why I pointed that out. The only indicator that we evaluate right now is chronic absenteeism at that lower level. And it just doesn't work in a district like our size. We have 4 sites is all, and there's no way that there's going to be the ability to say this site has a different calendar than another site.
Yeah, and I heard that. And part of it is, and the superintendent has left the room, but part of it is, you guys hit me today, not that you hit me, but it hit me for the first time that we're not thinking about these, we call them special schools or alternate schools or something like that when we created the ESSA plan or the A to F report card. But we need to think about what does that mean for K-2 schools, I'm going to use that as an example, or pre-K-2 school. What does that mean? I've added that on the agenda. I did just add it on my notes on the agenda, not the actual slide. But here on my notes, it now says, think about non-traditional or I forget what we called them, but these special schools like a PK2. Do they go majority rules? Is it these kids shouldn't be taught more than 6 hours a day anyway, so fit that in? Because we talked last time about the data showing those are the kids that are hurt most by the long school days. But that needs to be brought in for next meeting. I'm just not prepared to have that conversation today because I didn't gather any data on those schools because it didn't enter my mind until today.
But if we get into a point where there's no accountability with that lower school, but
right,
the rest of the schools are evaluated and they play a factor in is our district able to go with an alternate calendar, that's not going to be a good situation for us.
And I might just speak to the whole school site thing. So it's mine. We collect the calendar data at the school site level. We don't collect it at a district level. We produce it at a district level because we kind of push those numbers together and try to come up with something, because people want to know about the districts. People want to know the calendar at the district level, but the calendar is actually calculated at the site level and submitted to us that way, and every site has to meet the 1,080 hours. So if you have an electrical, you know, you've got schools like just this week, four schools or something in Edmond closed and the rest didn't. Well, those schools will have to make up those hours. You know, their calendar will have to be adjusted slightly. So I think perhaps there was an assumption made on our part that it would be at the school site level because that's how the data comes in. I mean, I think these are all really valid points. I think we'll have to kind of, our SDE team, think about what that would look like if we were to do it at a district level. Because also, what if you have in your four sites or three sites, two of them meet the minimum criteria and two of them don't? Do you get the waiver or do you not get the waiver? So I think that's another hard question to wrestle with. If you don't do it at the site level, or if one of your sites meets and three don't, do you get the waiver or not get the waiver? So, I think if you do it at the district level, there are a whole other set of questions that will have to be worked through, same as if it's at the site level. So maybe just do some more thinking about that between now and the next meeting, and we'll get together with our data people and the accreditation officers and try to get their input. Maybe we can come back and have a bigger conversation about that next time.
Because, Carolyn, just as you're talking and we're sort of looking and I'm looking at our data, you know, we would have one, our elementary school wouldn't qualify based on growth with a particular subgroup. So does that then knock our entire district out? Or can we meet 4 out of 5 criteria, 7 out of 10?
Yeah, I mean, that's
something
the
to think about moving forward.
So if we were to do it at a district level, that's the question. If you have one site that meets and everybody else doesn't. But also, I mean, perhaps another piece to think about is we've looked at data where high schools can do this more successfully, perhaps academically, than elementary schools. So then you go back to a site level question. Well, is it okay for a high school to do it? And especially since we're going to use different criteria versus the elementary school. So I think just some things to think about if you all, you know, circle up with the people that you, especially our school folks, and think, help us think through that. I mean, I think we can be open to that, but perhaps there was an assumption made on our part that it would be at the site level because that's how the calendars are calculated to begin with, but we can try to think through what else that might look like.
Yeah, and just to keep in mind, there's 245 districts, 541 schools. So we're not looking at districts with 17 schools in them. So what I'd like to do right now, I think we keep the guidelines at the school level, but there may be that second step of within the district, what do we do if 1 out of 4 schools doesn't meet criteria? And that I kind of would want the superintendent in the room for. So I want to run where we are. So again, the idea behind, and I didn't mean to start a whole kerfuffle, but the idea behind just running the data was just an FYI. If we have 245 districts, how many of them would be 100% in or 100% out? Because if this is something where we would have 6 out of 245 districts have a mixed group, that may be something we want to handle at the individual district level. If it is 200 out of the 245 have mixed within the district, we're probably going to need to set some rules behind it. Just my thought. But I want to at least run the numbers to say how many of those 245 districts are all in or all out, and how many are a mixed bag. Question I had for you, though, and what I'm struggling with a little bit is, do I actually do this by name number of district? I mean, do I do it more on a general level and let's keep the conversation at the theory? Or, and I know individual districts, and I'm happy to share the data individually, but as a room, do we want to know how Cottonwood would fall? Is Cottonwood a yes or a no? Is this school within this district a yes or a no? Or do I keep it just at a general, this is the number at each of these, and not worry about the names? Yeah, we have to be a little careful about 4-day weeks, because remember, this is not a 4-day week at law. Yes, sir.
I don't know that you can necessarily identify unless you have 100% confidence that it's staying in this task force room.
Okay.
And I have not that belief.
Yep. So I think what I would like to do then, and I appreciate you saying that, is give you the data by numbers. So out of the 245 districts, now to the 541 schools, but I will have the data broken out by name so individual superintendents can come look at their
their data that I ran. But you can't look at other districts unless you come up together as a duo. So you have to agree to share with each other. Okay, that's fair. You've given me a list of, is there anything we haven't talked about in terms of homework that Brian and I will do between now and the next meeting that you want to add to our homework list? And yes, we are wrapping up, so. Can somebody give her a mic, please?
As you know, I looked at some of those report cards, mm-hmm. so I do know the information you want to get. But can you tie or show an example of the school report card and the post-secondary opportunities? Because there's a lot of information that I wasn't clear what qualifies as that post-secondary opportunity that we're talking about. And then the other thing is just the number of children that we're talking about in the 165, because it's a lot less than the over 165.
So. Yep. Yep. Okay.
And
yes, sir.
Yeah. I know you had touched on this briefly. We were talking about the district level versus individual school level. Most of these statistical points we're looking at, you said, are between fourth grade and eighth grade, right? So if we're weighting everything really heavily towards middle school, those are going to be the schools that are going to decide primarily for the district, the way that we have the statistics set up.
Well, we have separate right? things for the high school. So, and quite honestly, okay. the majority of schools with less than 165 days have a PK-8 school. So they don't have an elementary, middle, and high. It's PK-8, 9-12.
Okay.
So they would hit PK-8, so 4-5 out of their whatever grades in PK-8 school would be affected. And then high school is an emphasis on grades 11 and 12 in high school.
Okay.
Can you... Just down, yep, down to your left.
I just have one more thing I would like for just to get some input on, maybe from some of the other superintendents. But we talked last time about the possibility of the it not being a year to year, that maybe it being a waiver was in place for more than 1 year because there is such a transition going from one calendar to another calendar. And we didn't really touch on that today. Is that still something that is a possibility, or is it just every year it will be evaluated and it's year to year?
Yeah, I don't think there's been a decision made on that, but I definitely think that the idea, I see the pros and cons for it, and sorry, I've been racing to another meeting and back. So every year that is something that has to be shared out as annual reporting. So it makes sense to me. It gives greater flexibility to districts to look at where they are that year. This really only concerns districts if they're right on the bubble. So hopefully that's not something. If you're a district teetering year after year, you know that I don't think that's going to affect very many schools.
We'll find out next week. Okay, so I'm going to do that and. This is my almost last slide. So this is just make sure you guys have the correct date and time. We're going to review basically this being sort of our consensus with a couple questions. We're going to give you data, look at the impact on the schools, make sure we have what we agree with as our final areas where consensus was reached for possible inclusion and guidelines. And then we'll, at that point, talk about the idea of the district plan and get a little more concrete on that we've talked about. And the thing that I need to add here is talk about the non-traditional schools like a PK-2. That's our agenda for next time. Anything else I'm missing that we should add? All right, got you out of here an hour and 10 minutes early. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you so very much. We appreciate each and every one of you, and thank you for sharing your opinions and thoughts with us and keeping the focus on kids. Thanks. Bye-bye, everybody. Have a safe travel back.